Tonight we are going to be studying patience. I enjoy talking about patience. It was kind of funny. So I signed up for this and then told my wife, like, oh, I meant to check this with you, but I'm not going to be able to be home to help with our three crazy children on July, whatever it is, 12th. I'm teaching on patience. So yeah, she's like, oh, I taught him that at Women's Bible Study this year. And we were laughing. I had forgotten that she had done that. But when she signed up for that and she told me that she was teaching on patience, I like choked on my dinner because she is the world, and this is her word. She's here, so I can make all the fun of her that I want, right? So she, in her words, she said that she is the most impatient woman in the world, married to the most patient man. So we like to tease each other a lot. My patience drives her crazy, especially before we were engaged. I'm probably exaggerating to say that you were ready to get married like 2 weeks after we started dating, but it wasn't a lot longer than that. We'd known each other for a while. We interned together is how we met. Actually, we had like the same internship at a medical device company and stayed in touch. And I finally admitted, because I'm very patient, I was like, I'm going to play the long game here. You can just keep dating as many people as you want. We'll get there. And I was like, I actually really like you. And she's like, what? Where was that? And I was like, I got it out eventually. It just took me a year and a half. And so anyway, so we finally started dating, and then she's like, are you ever going to ask? The day that I proposed, actually, I'll just get rid of all the, like, making fun of you in the first 2 minutes. So, the day that I proposed at about 11:45 a.m., she was expressing a little frustration or distress in my patience in asking for her hand in marriage. And I had this whole thing planned out. I'd been to San Francisco 5 times designing and having her ring made. She didn't know about any of that. And so I had this whole thing, and she thought we were having dinner with my best friend and his wife in the city that night. And I couldn't resist. I was like, this is just too tasty not to like poke at this. And so I was like, are you going to be able to enjoy dinner with Taylor and Catherine tonight, knowing that I'm not going to propose and or not that something? And it gets better. So the next words out of her mouth were, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that you're not proposing to me tonight. And like 5 hours later, we were on Treasure Island as a sunset, and I proposed, and she was like, are you joking? I was like, I would be afraid for my life to joke about this, like, after everything we've just been through. So anyway, so we have a healthy discourse about patience in our family. We have 3 little kids who are 6, 2, and 7 months, and we have hourly, if not minutely, opportunities to be patient with them, and they have to be patient with us, and it's good. All right, so let's jump in a little bit. I don't know what you guys have normally been doing. I'm not usually able to be here because of our 3 crazy children. So what we're going to do tonight, if this is normal, great. If not, have fun. We're going to look at 2 passages in the Bible that talk about patience, and we're also going to look at some biblical examples of patience and impatience, and then we'll have hopefully some fun discussion at the end. So I'm just going to jump in. So if you brought a Bible, or you want to, no one does that anymore, you just use your phones, huh? Sorry. So tap your way to James 5, verses 7 and 8. I'll read it for us now. So James writes, be patient, therefore, brothers and sisters, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. So I think, and we'll get to in a few minutes why I think this is such a great passage to start with to talk about patience. The reason we're talking about tonight is it's one of the fruits of the Spirit, which is what you're studying this summer. The reason I like this passage to start with to talk about patience is that it's a command. It's not like, oh, it's like, it's nice to be patient. It's like you be patient. It's very clear, as a command and a directive, like we ought to live our lives this way. And I think that then begs why. And so, he's just been earlier in chapter 5, he's been issuing a warning against the rich, and the people who live here and now instead of waiting for the day of the Lord in his words. And I think that also is very relevant, right? Like we are all rich living in Silicon Valley. It's really hard to live here, and housing is expensive and jobs don't pay enough. And like no one here feels rich, but by the world standards, like we certainly can live in the here and now, and we have anything that we really need. And so I think it's a relevant context for us too. Like, are we being patient? Are we waiting forgot to act, or are we too busy caught up in life and our careers and Silicon Valley's being itself, whatever, just running around doing all that stuff. So I think that it's worth considering that and the way that we look at our life. Like, are we doing what this farmer is doing, waiting for the precious fruits of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains? And, this isn't a perfect example or analogy, but we have a very similar climate here to Israel. I always think of Israel as being very deserty, or maybe like the Central Valley, if we can make fun of them. But I actually went there on a business trip, and it's like super green. You like forget that it's actually part of the Fertile Crescent, and things grow like crazy there, as they do here. And so like you can just like sneeze seeds into the ground anywhere in on the peninsula, and like you'll have whatever. Like before it was Silicon Valley, it was the Santa Clara Valley, which had like cherry orchards and all kinds of stuff. We're pretty sure that the home we live in was actually built for people who worked in the cherry orchards, because it's like 110 years old, and everything in Sunnyvale at the time was cherries. But so it's easy a little bit to relate to this just living here. Like if you plant something in November and like it'll bloom and you could pick it, we have an orange tree in our backyard. We could pick the oranges in March, but you can also wait through the summer, which is a relatively similar cycle to what they would have in Israel. And then it rains again in October, November, and things plump up and they get like super juicy and amazing. And this farmer has to be patient in the example that he gives, saying like, you could eat it right now and like it will sustain you, but you could wait for it and wait for God to water it again when the season, you know, the wet season rolls back around, and it'll be even better then. And I think that is a really great example actually for us, because there are a lot of things in life where like this is great right now and you get excited about it, and that's not to say that those are bad things necessarily, but it's worth stopping to say like, where is God in this? Is he asking me to be patient right now? Is like, do I grab the first opportunity that comes my way, or do I wait to see what he is bringing about in my life and then like and reap the blessings that come with that? So if we're doing that, the second command in this passage is to establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand, right? Like he's saying, be patient. Not it's good to be patient, but like actually you, Dan, go be patient. And if you're being patient, the way to do that, or the reason to do that, is to establish your heart, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. And so the Greek word for that could be translated a few ways. You could say strengthen your heart or abide. The longer definition is really to say to take your heart and make it stable, place it firmly, set it fast, fix it, make it firm, render it constant, confirm it, your heart and your mind. And I think that also, like, if you do that, it's a lot easier to be patient. If you're patient, it's a lot easier to do that. So I think that the two commands come hand in hand. To jump ahead to the second command, to drill into that word, I want to now do the same for the word patient he uses. The word comes up twice. He's like, be patient, and you also be patient. So that word is, I'm going to slaughter the Greek, Dan can correct us, but I think it's like makros umeo, is the Greek word that is translated here for us in English as patient, as being patient. And that, the longer definition for that is to be of a long spirit, not to lose heart, to persevere patiently and bravely in enduring misfortunes and troubles, to be patient in bearing the offenses and injuries of others, or to be mild and slow in avenging, and to be long-suffering, slow to anger and slow to punish. I really like that there's kind of two threads in that definition, right? So the first part is be of a long spirit, don't lose heart, persevere patiently and bravely in enduring misfortunes and troubles. That's the first definition. And then the second one is be patient in bearing the offenses and injuries of others. Relationally, be mild and slow in avenging, be long suffering, be slow to anger and slow to punish. I think those are two, not different, but complementing, very relevant definitions of patience in this passage. So, the one is situational. You're waiting for God to act, and hopefully, using the second part of verse 8, you're abiding in the meantime. You're strengthening and confirming and stabilizing your heart. The second half of the definition is relational. It's preserving the unity of our shared faith, being slow to anger, being long-suffering, The way this is one thing that contributes to what's written elsewhere in the New Testament as walking in a manner worthy of the calling that you've been called to. So that then, does that make sense? I'll pause. Situational, relational patience. Do those make sense? We'll talk in a little bit more about like a lot of hopefully really practical, relevant ways that those play out in your life. So the situational patience is more what James is referring to in this passage. He's saying, be patient until the coming of the Lord or until God is moving in your life or, you know, whatever the coming of the Lord. I mean, we know what that means in the like eternal perspective, but also I think it could apply like today. Like, what is the coming of the Lord? Am I being impatient with my boss usually, at work, at home with my kids, whatever? Like, there's situational patience, but then also there's a relational half. And so that jumps, tap your way to Ephesians 4 verses 1 and 2. And this is a really relational passage on patience. So in Ephesians 4, Paul writes, I, therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. And so it's, again, I don't actually know Greek, but from my study of it, it's the same root word, just conjugated slightly differently. And here it's mostly the relational aspect, certainly in context in the passage. It's talking about patience, forbearance, long-suffering, slowness in avenging wrongs. The context, certainly, he's talking about speaking to the church in Ephesus where there was like a huge riot and they were all stirred up when he was there. And he's like, I am urging you to walk in a manner worthy of calling to which you've been called, with humility and gentleness and with patience and bearing with one another in love. And that certainly, if it's not a command, it's a plea, right? He's begging these guys, like, live patiently with one another. And why? Right? It's the last sentence. It's because he wants them to be eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. Like, we ought to be loving one another. That is very clear all throughout the New Testament. It's, you know, there's probably 300 references to, like, loving one another and in a lot of different ways. And he's saying to do that, you are going to have to bear with one another in love. You are going to have to be humble and gentle, and you are going to have to be patient. So I think that this pair of passages, James 5 and Ephesians 4, really covers the bases on, like, how our command to be patient and why to do it. I think that it's easy to talk about and it's really hard to do. It's hard, I know, for me to be patient situationally. I usually do a little better on the relational side. Just that's my personality, but it's hard to live and interact with other people, right? And we drive each other crazy, and the people that we love, we get in arguments with, and our kids drive us crazy or whatever. But do you guys have any questions, thoughts, comments? I like being interrupted, and you're really quiet. Okay. So the other thing I wanted to do tonight was just, I'm going to throw out a couple examples, and then I want to provide time as we're sort of in discussion groups to, like, think of your own examples. So I'm going to give you four examples right now of patience or extreme lack thereof from the Bible. We can talk about it a little bit, but be thinking, one of the things I want you guys to talk about in discussion groups is, like, who are your examples, whether it's the person sitting next to you or your boss or a character that you studied a lot in the Bible. So the four examples, the first two are examples of extreme impatience. So the first one I thought was relevant was the Israelites as they left Egypt. They did a lot of things wrong on that journey, but one of them certainly was they got really impatient while Moses was away, and they built themselves a golden calf and were like, we're done waiting for God. Like, he and Moses were talking for too long. Let's build this golden calf and we're going to, like, bow down to it right now. And you're like, are you kidding me? Like, he just led you out of Egypt. You saw the plagues, like, all these things. And you can't handle, like, you know, waiting for 2 more hours or 2 weeks or however much longer Moses was going to be away. And there are certainly dozens of examples. just in the exodus, probably, of the Israelites being impatient. But that was the one that jumped out to me as, like, almost comical that they could, like, go from, like, literally watching God lead them out of Egypt and separate the Red Sea and everything to just totally forgetting about him or being unwilling to wait for him and taking matters into their own hand. I am not going to go build a golden calf tomorrow. But I think that there are certainly times in our lives, too, when we get tired of waiting on God, whether it's for... You want to interrupt me?
I do.
Yes!
But I don't want to interrupt you, Vincent.
It's okay.
do you know how the timeline, how long it was between the time that the Israelites came out and the golden calf? Was it months or years, or do we know?
Not off the top. It definitely wasn't years. It was at the beginning of the trip. Do you know off the top of your head?
A lot of time.
I would say time scale days, maybe weeks. Off the top of my head, would that's my on the fly answer. That's Israelites just totally not having situational patience, right? They're like, I'm sure God and Moses are having a really nice conversation, but I'm ready to do something right now. So let's forget everything and go, like, build a, you know, ridiculous thing and bow down and worship it. A relational example of impatience, it's a little, this one is both, but, so Saul was not a great king, right? We know a lot of us know a lot of stories about him. The time he tried to pin David to the wall with a spear, but then asked him to come back and play his harp for him some more, and he and his son Jonathan, who was a great friend of David's, a less commonly told story that's super relevant in Saul's story, though, is in 1 Samuel 13. You actually have to back up if you want to. How long was it?
It was 40 days and 40 nights, according to Exodus 24.
Perfect. All right. So weeks. So in 1 Samuel 13, Saul does something really boneheaded. You have to go back a couple chapters to figure out why it was exactly so boneheaded. So in 1 Samuel 13, Saul has gotten himself in a little over his head. So he's, like, got 3,000 warriors from Israel, and he's got 1,000 over here, and I think 2,000 with him. And he's like, we were supposed to have a sacrifice before we go out to battle. And the guy who said he was going to do this, Samuel, the prophet, was supposed to do the sacrifice, but he's not here. He looks at him like, all right, I'll just do it real quick. Which is bad, but you don't realize how bad it was until you go back a couple chapters and realize, like, Samuel had anointed him, like, 1 week before. Like, he's only been king for a week, basically. And he was like, all right, here's the plan. Like, I'm going to make you king, and you can go, like, you know, have a parade around the country. And in 1 week, we're going to meet here, and I will do the sacrifice. And then we can go off to battle and, you know, conquer the Philistines and everything. And Saul followed the plan and offered a sacrifice that was not his to offer. And, of course, immediately after he's done, Samuel shows up and he's like, what have you done? And then God speaks to Saul through Samuel. And he's like, I'm out. Like, you've been king for a week, and I'm going to go find a man after my own heart. Like, you are not, clearly. If you can't wait for 2 hours for me, how can you lead my nation well? And so that thing, you know, 1 Samuel 13 is why a long time later David becomes king, and Saul's story is a tragic one, and it really started here. I mean, it started also long before this, but this is the first thing he does wrong. This is the point when God's like, you're not going to be king for very long. Like, you are the king of Israel still, but my heart is going to be with somebody else. Okay, so those are the two negative examples I had. Be thinking in the back of your mind, what are some other ones that maybe you would learn from? Two examples of patience in the Bible. The first one from the Old Testament is Jacob. So he goes away and he's betrothed to the daughter of a man named Laban. And he's like, you can marry my daughter. This is not how my conversation with Bethany's dad went, by the way. He's like, you can marry my daughter after you worked for me for 7 years. And so he's like, man, that's a long time, especially considering their life expectancy back then. And so he does, and he works, and he's faithful to Laban for 7 years, and he does everything he asks, and he helps him herd his sheep and goats and, you know, whatever, all the stuff he does. On the wedding night, Laban tricks him, and he gives him, like, the not-awesome daughter. And he's like, wait. In the morning, they figure it out, and he's like, that was supposed to be my wife. He's like, oh, you wanted that one, the one that we agreed on? That's another 7 years. And Jacob's like, okay, like, I will work for 7 more years. Like, he spent 14 years of his life faithfully, you know, serving doubly, in some sense, his sentence to garner the wife that he had been promised and wanted. Like I said, Bethany's dad just laughed and told a funny story about the first time he heard my name and I asked for his permission to marry her. It was a short conversation, not a 14-year-long one. But I think Jacob is an amazing example of, like, this is God's plan for me. Like, I'm going to marry Rachel. And now, apparently, I'm also married to Leah. But, like, if 7 more years are involved, like, I will wait. And, like, Rachel is coming home with me back to the promised land. And so he did it for, you know, 14 years. I can't even imagine. Like, I've been living back in the Bay Area now for 16 years as of this September. I lived here when I was a little kid, too. But it's, like, almost as long as I've been back in the Bay Area, like, almost half my life, he sat there doing whatever Laban said, taking the cows out or, you know, whatever, like, patiently, faithfully, even when he was wronged, he faithfully, you know, lived out that commitment to his future father-in-law, who was not a very great person. All right, so the second example I have for patience is Jesus, obviously. I think that all of Jesus' ministry is really characterized by the tone that he lived with of there being a time and a place for everything. And he was not worried or hurried or rushed by anything. There's a great example in Mark 2 where they have this, like, amazing day of ministry in town, and, you know, the next morning they're, like, people are, like, beating the door down, like, we want to see Jesus too, and he's like, nope, I'm going that way. And he's like, God has other things for us right now, and we'll come back here and we'll come love these people and heal some more sick people, but, like, I'm going to patiently go about the work that my Father has set for me. I think the most poignant example that occurred to me of Jesus demonstrating patience in a situation and with a person relationally was the day that Lazarus died. He was a personal friend of Jesus, and they were like, he's dying, you need to come right now. And he started going, but he wasn't panicked. He didn't rush. He took his time, and, like, that was the day that the woman touched his cloak to heal her bleeding, and he stopped and, like, dealt with that situation and loved on her. And by the time they got there, it was too late, and Lazarus had died. And even though Jesus was powerful and was like, we're going to fix that situation in a moment, first I'm going to weep, like, my heart is broken that my friend has died. And yet, even in that moment, he was like, I'm going to be patient and not just like, okay, boop, fixed, Lazarus is back. I'm going to grieve with everyone else who is grieving here and love them in this moment. And now is the time for God's power to be displayed in Lazarus' new life. I love that it demonstrates his patience, but also not that he wasn't, like, immune from the reality of the situation. Like, he was in that moment. He was present with the woman who touched his cloak and with the people who were weeping and, like, you're too late. And he's like, well, we'll get to that. I just think it's an incredible picture of Jesus' patience. Okay. So the last couple things I wanted to talk about, again, be thinking about some positive examples, either from your life or from, characters you've spent a lot of time contemplating in the Bible, but just to kind of step back, a little bit back even from what James 5 and Ephesians 4 had to say and any of the examples we could come up with in the scriptures. Like, something that occurred to me as I was just sort of thinking about teaching tonight, I feel like in a lot of ways, like, almost all of my impatience is rooted in a lack of faith. Like, if I'm impatient with a situation, it's because I don't trust that God's resolution for that situation is going to be the one I want or when I want it or whatever. Relationally, you can think of that differently, but like if it's a lack of faith or it's your human nature or you're acting in the flesh too, like I think just recognizing that in yourself and being like, I'm impatient, like, oh, maybe I need greater faith, and that's a nice thing to like ask for that you probably won't get right away. But I think in striving for that and then struggling with that, like Jacob wrestled with God, I think that you will learn a lot in starting just in recognizing your impatience in your life or backing that up a little bit. And it's not that I'm just like, I'm frustrated in this, you know, I get this way. I don't drive very often. I ride my bike to work and have for a lot of years. And now when I drive, I get super frustrated because I'm like, this stupid light, like if I was on my bike, I could just, you know, like zoom past and like I would be there already. And my wife is like, you really need to calm down. I'm like, no, this light needed to not turn red right now. Like, I don't want to be 2.5 minutes later. Like, I have no time in my life. I get really impatient while driving. Whereas on a bike, I just feel like I can, well, just jump on the sidewalk and everything works out a little faster. But it's the problem isn't that the light turned red, right? The problem is just that I am not being patient in my life. It's that I don't think that I have enough minutes in that day to live the life that I want, to be the dad that I want to be to my kids, and I want to get home 5 minutes sooner so I have 5 more minutes to wrestle with them before they go to bed, or, you know, whatever. But I need to trust that, like, I can get there 5 minutes later and it's okay. You know, God will bless 5 minutes less time with my sons when I get home from work if I'm running late or whatever. And that's challenging for me, and I, like I said earlier, I'm the most patient person in the world. Something we talked about, particularly with Jesus, on the way to recall Lazarus back to life, that I think is worth considering for us in our lives, is being patient and having faith affords you the opportunity to be present. Like, Jesus was the most present person ever, right? Like, the woman at the well was not expecting to have the conversation. She was like, I'll get you some water, let's have a passing conversation. He's like, no, we have a lot to talk about today. Like, he was there to talk with her, you know. And when the lady touched his cloak and he's like, who touched me? And they're like, dude, 400 people just bumped into you. Like, why are you trying to figure out who touched your cloak? And he's like, like, somebody touched me. And he stopped and was like, we'll deal with Lazarus when we get there, but I want to talk to this woman and love her right now. So instead of rushing off to the next thing, for me, it's always, you know, some light that I feel like I could have, like, pushed a little harder on my bike and gotten through faster or whatever. Not rushing off to the next thing. This goes back to the establish your hearts part of James 5, I think. Like, just slowing down and being patient and abiding, or, you know, being still, being present where you are, can be really amazing. If you haven't talked with him before, Eric is, quietly sitting over here, is a great person at this. Like, Eric is another person who's, like, very present. There can be a lot going on, and Eric's like, we'll talk about that later, but, like, how are you today? And he's really good at that, and it's a great way to be, and it's really hard to be that way living in Silicon Valley. Like, at work, I, you know, go to work and try to go to the bathroom for 4 hours before I have time to, like, duck into a bathroom for 2 minutes, because I'm so busy at work, and I'm sure all of you have similar jobs or PhDs that you're working on or whatever. Like, we live in a really busy place. It's really hard to actually be present here, to not just be like, I'm have these things on my agenda and I'm going to be here and do that and do that and do that and do that, but to slow down and be like, how are you today? And not just like, hi, fine, you know, to a coworker, but like, no, actually, how are you? And like, have a meaningful conversation, for example. The last principle I'm going to steal from my wife when she taught, but it's also just as a final word of encouragement. Patience is it's a fruit of the Spirit, not a perfect a character trait of someone who is a perfect human, right? So like, it's God's work to do in you. He is commanding you in James, like, you, Daniel, be patient. But it's also good and okay to recognize, like, it's His work to do in you. Like, the Spirit is going to make you patient or help you be more patient. Like, it isn't like I need to, you know, write out my 100 things to do to make myself patient today. Like, the command is like, you establish your heart and let the Spirit, you know, produce its fruit in your life, basically. So I feel like that's a good reminder and encouragement on the heels of what I said about it's hard to be patient here, right? Like, I'm a very patient person and I still have a very frenetic life. And it's a really encouraging to know that, like, this is, if you are going to be patient, it's not because you're going to have figured out how to, like, slow down or meditate or do your yoga in the morning or whatever to, like, achieve that state. It's like your command is establish your heart and let the Spirit produce its fruit in your life. So I think that that is, I hope that that is super encouraging. I encourage you just to get out of your own way and let God come do his thing.